Make it official.
Okay, well, we're just going to go ahead. Let's go ahead and get started, and Mark can jump on in. Since we're waiting on the mayor pro tem isn't going to be able to join us, so in the interest of expediency, we'll go ahead and call the September 13 meeting of the Carver Board of Aldermen to order. This is a work session.
November. November.
What did I say?
September.
I was thinking it would work the other way. I'm like,
you want more time in your chair?
I've got three to go here, boys and girls. And yeah, man. Well, that's it. No, there's obviously need for therapy there. In any case, item number one on our work session is an update on fire station number two. Steve?
Okay. Yeah, we have with us tonight Ken Newell with Stuart Cooper Newell, who's here to present an update to the board on the site plan, some elevations, and the internal floor plan for site or fire station number two. And Travis Crabtree's coming up with Ken, and I will turn it over to them. It's taken us a while to get to this moment, but we're finally here to show you some things related to the fire station.
Good evening. See everyone here today. Appreciate you having me. Just want to bring you up to speed on where we are with the fire station project. I know it's been a little while since we've been with you, so I wanted to give you an idea. And as an update to where we are on the fire station project, just as a reminder, this is the site that we have to work with, which we've discussed before. It's got a number of constraints and limitations associated with it, and you can get an idea of the tree lines, the topography, and everything from that existing shot. This is the existing survey of that same piece of property without any development associated with it. And this is the site plan that's been developed. Ken, kind of a reminder that as the result of the design sessions and charrettes that we've had, there were a lot of good suggestions and ideas that came out of those sessions. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be involved in those. And this is the site plan that represents some of the input from those facilities. I have a pointer here. There we go. As you can see from the site, again, with the restrictions on the site itself, this is the boundaries of the site, the property lines. You see the dashed line inside being the building setback line and some of the front buffer setback as well. You see in the larger circle some of the more significant trees that are identified on the site, along with a significant tree line that takes place up at this part of the site. So the northern end of the site does have a significant number of trees associated with that. What we have been able to accomplish with the site plan itself, and again as a great result to some of the design charrettes and design sessions, is the floor plan of the facility. Again, the site drives an awful lot of the building configuration. So what we have is the vehicle bays closest to the road. One of the interest in the earlier charrette sessions was is that the fire station does reveal itself as a fire station to the community and not try to hide itself. So from the road frontage, the vehicles are there. One of the things that accomplishes is also to help to disturb the site as little as possible. The apparatus returning from a call would come into this lower driveway, come down the hill, up the hill to the pad itself, and into the station itself. As you can see, you've got the room on this part of the site for a future truck bay expansion of the building, and currently without the extra truck bay expansion for a visiting apparatus to have a parking space located there as well. And then when the calls take place, they would come out of the facility over to out to this, which is directly across the street from the Windmore development that's across the street, and that was a request of DOT and some of the development to come out at that location. You can see all of the staff and public parking areas up at the top end of the site. The public areas of the building, entrances, lobbies up in this area, and then the more private areas of the facility back to the back and to the rear. The vehicle bays where they are help form a fairly natural buffer, a sound buffer and a visual buffer between the public areas and the private areas. And even though this livable part of the station, so to speak, is fairly elongated, we'll look at that plan in just a moment, it does provide some opportunities. As you know, we're trying to achieve a lot of the elements of sustainable design in the facility, and one of the things that this elongated plan does is give us a lot of opportunity for natural daylighting and views, visual views to the outside from the facility. I'll be glad to come back to that site plan as we go through. This is the floor plan itself, again, north being to your left. So you see to the left-hand side the lobby or the public entrance coming into the facility, one elongated corridor that feeds the majority of that building. Starting at the front are the public spaces, the police department area or substation with a separate entrance from that covered area to the facility, lobbies, office areas, training, community-type rooms in this area, EMS, and then from this door back becomes the private areas or the firefighter areas. So you've got the kitchens, the day rooms, the exercise rooms, and then the sleep rooms back to this part of the building. The vehicle or apparatus support areas here, and then the two double-loaded drive-through bays associated with that area. So, and the outside patio as well off of the day room and the kitchen. So it worked out to be an extremely compact floor plan, again, driven by the site with its elongated views. And so the exterior of the building, this is what we have worked on now, which gives you some of the idea of the massing of the facility. You can see a lot of natural daylight along the front of the building, also around the apparatus bays themselves, bringing as much natural light as possible, some gently sloping roof surfaces throughout. This is that covered patio off the back of the building that we were referring to earlier, and again, that main public entrance with the police department here and then the fire department entrance at that point. This is another view of that same facility out from the street, and you can get an idea of what the one thing that this photograph does not or this image does not show you is the topography, and as we've discussed before, there is significant topography changes, particularly going to the rear of the site. And speaking of that, let me back up a couple of spots to identify. You can see the topography is lowest in this area, so we have identified these trees that have not been disturbed per the footprint or the driveways, but once stormwater is calculated and we determine how we're going to address the stormwater detention on that, we need to keep in mind that is the low area of the site, so we'll do our best to keep from disturbing any of those areas, but we'll just have to keep that as a possibility as to try to save as much of that as we possibly can. Again, that view from the main street. So from the street, you can see the visiting apparatus truck here, two drive-through bays, fairly significant windows. Fortunately, that is on the north. This what you're viewing here is the north side, so we've got significant glass there. And then the glass that goes around the top of the vehicle bays themselves is shaded significantly by the overhangs of the roof, so we don't get a lot of the summertime sunshine into those spaces. What I've done is taken that same photograph and superimposed some of the significant trees that exist on the site. Obviously, I don't have a magnolia tree in my rendering program, but you can get an idea, and hollies, and you can get an idea of where some of those tree lines exist. Gives you a better picture of what you might likely see through the vegetation if we're able to save as much of that as possible. This tree would represent that significant 32-inch holly that is out there, and as you could have told from the site plan, we are staying outside of the drip line with all development. It looks like that's going to be possible to take care of that as well. Another view from the southern side of the site. Again, you can see, and it doesn't recognize the topography changes, but coming in, going up the topography until you get to this and then through the facility as well, you can see from the circles on the ground where some of those significant trees are. And just to give you a better view of that, you can see how some of those existing trees might fit with the building itself. So that's the site, that's the floor plan, and that's the exterior views. I remind you just that we are in a schematic design phase at this point, and with town approval, we will move forward into the design development phase to better detail and develop some of these views and things that we're trying to accomplish with the facility. And I will be glad to attempt to answer any questions you may have.
This is just briefly just for Travis. Are you and your folks happy with this design from a functional standpoint?
Yes, sir. We worked with Ken extensively throughout, changing a few rooms here and there, also with our IT department, and we feel we've got a floor plan that's going to work very effectively for our staff.
Cool. I really like the architecture. I like the – it's a sort of contemporary milieu that there's a lot of around here, but hasn't been a lot built lately. I'm impressed.
As you go to the back of the building, does the foundation get deeper, you know, going down the slope? Or is
no, sir. Let's go to the site plan. I'll give you a better view for that. At the back of the building, this will be a the pad itself of the building will be graded out flat, so we will do some grading right around the perimeter of the site and then let the topography as much as possible drop away from the building at that point.
The site plan looks much better than I thought it would. Far more compact. I'm really impressed with that. Is there anything in the recommendations, because I do not have the list of recommendations that we made in front of me, are there any recommendations that you felt like you just couldn't meet, something that is outstanding that you want to signal to us?
I don't recall any of the more prominent recommendations from either of the two sessions that we're not able to incorporate into the design. Obviously, every tree couldn't be saved, but we have attempted to save as many of the most significant ones as possible. We did one of the recommendations that was brought up in the design charrette was to scatter the parking that you see at the north in through the trees. But as we started laying out the site, we found that we would actually disturb the land more and incorporate more paving surfaces by scattering those all the way to the north end of the site. This way we can compact as much of that and lessen the degree of severity of impact on the site by grouping them as close to the front entrance of the building as possible and preserving from that tree line that you see identified as this line from there up, preserving as much of that tree line as possible north of there.
So, and I really don't remember which that tree line, what is beyond that. I know there's one huge, is that the
all of the larger trees have been identified. There's one holly that's not identified. This is the larger of the holly that's had the most conversation. There's one more holly, I think, right in this area. And based on the layout of the bays, that one was just going to be impossible. And because we're having to bring that driveway from lining up across, it was going to be impossible to save that one. But the others, this is just simply the tree line, so there were not any identified other trees that were significant on that.
And
I'm sorry, that was not a holly, but that's a cedar.
Yes, ma'am. That cedar.
That would take place right in that truck exit.
Ah.
The only way to avoid that with the exit for the emergency traffic would be to do some serpentine patterns of the vehicles leaving and going on a call. That's not the most advisable thing to do with the emergency apparatus.
Anyone?
No, I'm just processing the cedar. I take a liking to that. I like that cedar.
Definitely. I have to say it's a good looking station, and I think having been to the charrette, it does incorporate, I think, everything that I remember anyway that we talked about at the charrette. Obviously, there were two different proposals about how to go about it, and this is exactly exactly one of those two. So that's great, and I agree with Alex. Like the aesthetic of what you're doing, so it looks like it's going to be a beautiful station.
Good. We're looking forward to moving forward.
And perhaps I missed it, but what is the anticipated timeline for the construction of this state?
If you all give the go-ahead to take the next step tonight, then we would hope to start construction, I think, next summer.
Yes.
The next step, obviously, is to get some actual preliminary construction drawings and so forth in to start reviewing and start looking at the stormwater and those kind of more detailed things on the site. But the ideal would be by next summer we'd be under construction.
So you need do you need some action?
If the board's comfortable, we'd like for you all to direct that we proceed in accordance with the contract with the architectural firm.
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed with from this this general design, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Thanks a lot for your work on this.
Thank you for having us.
Nice job.
Thank you
very much.
Chief Crabtree, thank you.
And thanks to Travis to be here. You know, he has a new baby at home, and
oh yeah, congratulations.
He's on family medical leave, but he's here tonight.
Oh, good, yeah.
Both sides are important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thanks, right. Travis.
This is going to be your other baby here.
On both babies, you're
all right. Second item on our agenda is the presentation of the capital improvements plan.
Well, it's that time of year again, folks. As you all know, every year about this time we provide an update of our six-year capital improvement program, and as you all know by now, each year we drop a year and add another year, and that's what we've done this time. A couple of acknowledgments. I'd especially like to thank Bing Rennig, our assistant town manager, and Sandy Savoda and the management services for a ton of work on this, but also our advisory CIP committee that's made up of department heads, and I think the majority of our department heads are here tonight. I think all are who have a project in the CIP for you all to look at, so my thanks to all of them. I'm going to run through this briefly because you all have seen this slide before. The thing I really want to emphasize again, though, is that the capital improvements program is really a plan. As you all know, it's not a budget. There's no money directly associated with this. This sets up the opportunity for you all to look at projects over a six-year planning horizon and make decisions that will inform the annual budget process. And it does lots of things. It gives us an opportunity to plan ahead, to look at design issues like we just talked about with the fire station. It helps us with our financial planning to try to match construction with revenues. It helps us try to maintain a healthy credit rating by showing the bond rating agencies that we really are looking out more than 1 year to see what kind of needs that we have. And it just gives us an opportunity to take a snapshot of many of the major capital needs of the community. Some examples of some of the things that the board has been responsible for accomplishing over the last few years. Our recreation and parks maintenance facility fund, playground equipment at Simpson Street. In a couple minutes, I'm going to show you a few pictures. Some of our local road and sidewalk improvements, our street resurfacing program, the Roberson bike path, fire alarm systems that are at Town Hall, the fire department, and the public works facility. Some of the things that are underway, an emergency generator at the Century Center. We're getting ready to open bids very shortly on that project. Our upcoming street resurfacing program, our sidewalk construction program that continues, and we'll go into more detail in another presentation as a part of the CIP tonight. A fire escape here at Town Hall to help us meet OSHA regulations, the Wilson Park bathroom construction, that's starting design now, and of course what you all just heard and approved moving forward, fire station number 2, which is our single biggest building project since the last fire station was built a few years ago. A few pictures. Simpson Street Park, you see the playground equipment there. You'll see in red here, this shows you what we've done with sidewalks to date. Still got plenty to do, but this I think gives you a good idea of having made a good start. This is the South Greensboro Street sidewalk that's been completed. This shows the old Fayetteville Road sidewalk under construction. The Roberson bike path that's been completed. And this is an example. This is a Ford Ranger. In the past, the town has typically bought full-size vehicles. We're trying to downsize every opportunity we can with smaller pickup trucks, with hybrids, with alternative fuel vehicles, everything we can to try to be as green as possible we're doing with our fleet. We're also trying to be as efficient as possible in other ways. This is one of our new garbage trucks. This garbage truck, of course, we know is the one-armed bandit, but not only does it handle household waste, but we also can use this vehicle for yard waste as well. In the older vehicles, we weren't able to do that. One of the things that I think is most important as we look at our capital improvements program is taking care of what we have. If we don't take care of what we have, we really ought not be thinking too much about doing new things until we take care of existing things. And you'll see about 36% of this proposed CIP of almost $34 million is focused on maintenance facilities and vehicles and existing equipment and so forth and replacement of those items so that we're taking care of what we have. And those are highlighted on the screen in yellow. Everything you see in yellow is considered a maintenance type of capital improvement project. The other thing I'd point out is if you look at the pie chart, you'll see the large chunk of pie, and then you'll see a little bit smaller chunk. Those two represent debt financing for our capital projects program. About 82% we will rely on a combination of general obligation bonds and installment financing. And then I think it's also important to note about 4.2% of the anticipated funding, or about $1.4 million, would come from grant funds. And we're always looking for opportunities to increase that number and percentage. Some of the changes that we're looking at, the overall projected CIP is almost $1.9 million more than the current capital improvement program, and that's mostly due to replacement of some very expensive vehicles over the next 6 years. Solid waste vehicles and fire trucks are two very pricey pieces of equipment, so we've got several of those, if you've looked through the vehicle replacement list over the next 6 years, that we need to take care of. You'll see something that looks kind of off when you first glance at it, and that's the Martin Luther King Jr. Park. It looks like the cost has decreased. It's just an accounting thing where the land has been acquired and taken care of, and so that's coming off the general ledger, and so it looks like we've decreased the cost by $500,000. That's not true. The cost hasn't decreased. In fact, I'm sure it's probably, by the time we get to it, it'll be more than that number, but it looks like it's decreased. So I wanted to explain that. We also are showing a decrease in information technology, and that's primarily because the upgrades to existing equipment and replacements we're now showing just as a part of the operating budget rather than plugging that into the capital improvement program. Looking at the sidewalk and greenways program, the construction of the new fire station, some of the departmental software applications that we feel like are really important to maintain a good service level for the community, and our vehicle and equipment replacement schedule, all will have a significant impact on the fiscal year 08-09 budget. And you'll see some of that now, but you'll see more of it in the spring as we prepare the annual budget. We've got several projects, and again, we're going to go into more detail shortly about these, but our sidewalk and greenway project, it now looks like, based on our current estimates and including looking at the possibility of adding a couple of projects that weren't considered in phase one originally, it looks like the $4.6 million bond amount that we are authorized to spend might not be enough to do everything. So there are probably choices to be made or maybe some alternative ways to look at funding. The greenway figures that are in there for Bowling Creek and Morgan Creek, those are 2003 numbers that probably weren't great numbers at the time, and so my guess is they're understated. The question is by how much, and as we move forward with those projects with design, we'll get a better handle on the cost of those, but we just need to be aware that we've got almost $300,000 identified. That amount's likely to go up. And then Weaver Street, which is a project that's been out there for a long time, again, we're going to spend some time on that tonight as a separate project, but we need to talk about that reconstruction, how that fits into the downtown circulation study, and exactly what option the board wants to choose with that. I do think the next 6 years give us an opportunity really to continue to move forward on actually doing things and not simply planning. The fire station is a major example of that. But over time, we hope to be able to look at acquiring some parking lots, to move forward with the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, to move forward with a new public works facility. A couple of adjustments, though, that, you know, we continue to try to look at balancing things, and we are suggesting that the potential for the parking lot needs to be moved out towards the end of the six-year planning horizon, barring something that might come up that, you know, might require us to juggle that again, and that could happen. And then the public works facility, while we've had the land for a while and the need is very significant, it's one of those things that, you know, we feel like if we've got to push something out, that's just one of those projects that probably needs to continue to be pushed out a little further. The capital improvements program that you have before you anticipates continuing to issue bond anticipation notes up to the full $4.6 million amount that was authorized by the voters in November of 2003. We did want to just put out on the table something for you all to think about from a policy standpoint. Remember that that $4.6 million is the maximum amount that we can issue. I believe folks were told from the very beginning the board had the option to go up to that and could stop short but couldn't go over that amount in terms of issuance of bonds. Right now, as you all know, we have just slightly under $2.6 million in bond anticipation notes already issued that at some point would be converted to long-term general obligation bonds. I asked Bing to just do a chart to show you all just for conversation what it would look like if the board said the $2.6 million is all we think we can afford to do. What would the impact be on that? And what you see is that for the next two fiscal years, it actually cost more than we have programmed. That's because we would convert those existing bands into general obligation bonds, and we would then begin to pay both principal and interest, whereas on bond anticipation notes, as you all know, we simply pay interest until we convert to long-term debt. But what does happen in the third year, if we stopped at the $2.6 million, is that the principal and interest would be considerably less than it would be on the $4.6 million. And so you can see in fiscal year 10-11, the savings would be right at $250,000 and would decline slightly each year over the next 20 years because the principal would be paid down, so then the interest drops slightly every year. Just something to think about. Just gives you an idea of what the impact is on the 2.6 versus the 4.6. This is a list that you all have seen before. Even the projects that we have in the six-year CIP is being recommended. It's an ambitious list. These are things that didn't make the six-year CIP, but things that we want to keep out in front, knowing that they are also interests and needs to be considered for and by the community. This building is in real need of renovation. There's been, you know, a lot of interest in an outdoor swimming pool, a great deal of interest in greenways beyond what's planned for as a result of the 2003 bond referendum, a gymnasium, some of the Roberson Street improvements that would be beyond what we can depend on developers to do, other local road improvements, and more bicycle and pedestrian improvements. All those things are great projects, but there is a limit to the number of dollars we have, and again, this is about a $34 million six-year CIP program without those projects in there. Just a brief reminder about how the CIP fits into what we do with the operating budget and with our fiscal policy. We want to try again to make sure that any debt that the town issues is proportionate in size and growth to our tax base, that we never use debt to balance the operating budget, that we try not to place an overdue burden on operating expenditures, and that we don't get our debt so high that it jeopardizes our credit rating, because what that does is makes it cost more money to borrow money. So we don't want to do that. The good news is, and you've seen the chart in years past, we benchmark ourselves against our peers in the same population group that we're in. Excuse me, and these are local government commission guidelines, and you can see even in the highest year of expenditures with debt in our capital improvements program, we stay in that average category. We don't ever get into the high arena, and it meets all of the objectives of the ratios that are tracked by the local government commission. It also meets the town's own fiscal policy, which you all have approved. And again, we don't get into that high debt ratio in any of the 6 years. Having said all that, and that's all very positive, and the town's in very good financial condition, and this capital improvements program wants to help make sure that we stay there. The most significant impact of the capital improvement program that we're looking at this year, just like in past years, is the potential impact on the property tax burden in the community that could occur. And I know we all know this, but I'd just like to remind everybody, we don't operate in a vacuum here in Carrboro. I think tonight Orange County is looking at their capital improvement program, and based on information we have from the county, it looks like over the next 3 years, given the debt service they've already committed to, and the projects in the pipeline, capital projects, that they could be looking at something somewhere on the range of 15 cents on the tax rate over the next 3 years. That doesn't include any increases in their operating budget beyond what might be a result of the capital projects. It also doesn't include what I think we all would anticipate would be normal operating increase request from both of the school systems. So not trying to alarm anybody, but just again trying to keep it real that we operate within the confines of Orange County, and what they do has an impact on us and vice versa. I do think it's also important to point out, though, a lot of times when people get their tax bills in Carrboro, they talk about the taxes as if they're all the town of Carrboro taxes. And I just remind the board that when a Carrboro resident gets their tax bill and the combined rate between the county, the school district, and the town is a little over $1.80 per hundred. But out of that, for every $1 that a Carrboro taxpayer sends to the county, 64 cents of that dollar goes to the county and the Chapel Hill Carrboro school district. The other 36 cents goes to the town of Carrboro. So just a little over a third of every tax dollar that's in that bill that comes in every September goes to the town of Carrboro. A lot of people like to put it all on the town, but the majority of the property tax rate is divvied up between the school system and Orange County. It doesn't help anybody's pocketbook anymore because it all comes from the same place, but it doesn't all go to the same place. Wrapping my part up, again, this roughly $34 million capital improvement program, we think, continues to move us forward in a positive way, taking plans and putting them into action and putting some real things on the ground and trying to take care of the investment that the town's made in its infrastructure over many years and trying to keep it in good shape. Again, we continue to focus on thinking green. You all know the commitment that we've made on the fire station, the Wilson Park bathrooms. We're looking at water-efficient facilities there. All the vehicles we buy, we look at how green they can be, how efficient they can be. We're looking at ways to retrofit our existing buildings. You know that we've done some tests with waterless urinals at the Century Center. We're looking at more things like that. We also have developed the capital improvements program with the idea of trying to level the projects over the six-year period so that we don't have a balloon effect, so that in any one year we don't see a huge spike that would have a really negative impact on our tax rate. And as you all know, every project in the CIP is going to come under scrutiny during the annual budget process, because unless it's already approved, there's nothing in this document that you approve that is a given until you vote on the budget and appropriate the money to do the project. And as I've said before, I know I sound like a broken record, but fiscal constraint makes it very difficult for us to look at adding any new projects to this capital improvement program. With that, the next two presentations will focus on two specific projects. One is the Weaver Street Reconstruction Project. The second one, which is obviously a bigger scoped project, is our sidewalk and greenway project, to give you some information about where we are and where we think we can go with that. And after these presentations, the first one will be by George Size, our Public Works Director. The second one on sidewalks and greenway will be a combination of George Size and Adina Messinger, our transportation planner. What I'd like to ask you to do is, after those presentations, if we could come back and ask you all to look at the resolution that's in your agenda packet and ask you all to consider the adoption of that resolution, which would allow us to move forward and use the capital improvement program with the preparation of the annual budget process, which will start shortly after the first of the new year. And with these next two presentations, we're not really looking for a lot of specifics at this point. We just want to get the information out there so that it really, there's no reason to hold up the capital improvement program approval if there are issues associated with either of these projects. We've gotten the basics covered with both of the projects in terms of the CIP. It's the details that need to be worked out, but I don't want you all to feel pressured into having to do that tonight, particularly with two members out. But I would try to pressure you a little bit to approve the CIP tonight if you're so inclined, because the reality is there's very little different in here from what you've seen in past years. So I've talked enough. Anybody have any questions for me? Yes.
Dan and then Alex.
Yeah, I just want to clarify your last point, because when I read the packet, it sounds like you're wanting us to consider some changes, particularly in the sidewalk program, but maybe also in the Weaver Street reconstruction. And are you suggesting that we approve the CIP and then consider those changes subsequently?
I think you can do that, because let me go to the sidewalk first. The only thing that would change the CIP is if you all decided to issue more or less than the $4.6 million. If you're committed to doing the 4.6, there's really nothing you need to do in terms of the CIP. Even doing less, that can be done at budget time or at a later discussion on the sidewalks. For the Weaver Street project, if you do, we have an option that George will get into, and I don't want to steal his thunder. If you want to do more than that, that would have an impact on the CIP, but it would have an impact two or three years down the road. That's not a project that would get started next year unless you all bump lots of other projects out of the way to try to fund that. When we still have a couple more years to put money aside to be able to even do the most basic work on Weaver Street.
Let me ask a specific thing about the sidewalks, because when I read the material in the packet, and hopefully I'm not jumping ahead and bringing this up now, but and given all the work that's gone into the sidewalk program mm-hmm. in the past, it seemed to me that we might want to have a public hearing and try and get some publicity out in terms of if we do want to consider decreasing the scope of the bond authorized project, that we should give the citizens a chance to weigh in on that, and that perhaps we might want to do that 2 weeks from now if that was possible on that schedule, and therefore incorporate any changes in the CIP. But it sounds like you're saying that timing isn't really important. My sense is, the CIP, a lot of citizens read the CIP, and, they see it in more rigid forms than it really is, in terms of a plan versus a commitment.
Right.
And if we are anticipating likely changes this year, that if it's possible to incorporate them, I think it would be worth doing so.
You certainly could do that. I think for this year, from a practical standpoint, we've got the $2.6 million in bond anticipation notes out there. George, in a couple of minutes, will show you where, with the projects we built, we still have a number of other projects that we can do with that money. And the reality is, in this fiscal year, we won't get to that $2.6 million. So from a budget standpoint, it really wouldn't matter. If you wanted to delay this 2 weeks, it would be possible to do it. But what I would strongly encourage is not to go beyond that, because then that gets into the holiday break, and then right. We don't have an adopted CIP until we're already starting to work mm-hmm. On the budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Have I totally confused the
no,
issue?
No, that's fine. And so I'll come back to that later. Okay. It seems appropriate.
Okay. Yeah. Steve, this is a more generalized question revolving around revenue projections. Mm-hmm. And as my understanding, and of course remind me if I'm mistaken, that revenue projections have been based on historical trends over the past few years. Well, as we know, the chickens from years of rampant speculation and house flipping are now coming home to roost. And while this area has been more stable than many, the deterioration of the housing and credit markets is having a ripple effect throughout the economy. And so as we go through, this CIP will obviously encompass at least one revaluation period, mm-hmm. as well that those trends, I think it would be naive to imagine that they're not going to have some impact on development activity and tax base growth over the period that the CIT encompasses. Has Bing made any adjustments in projections based on the fact that large segments of our economy are laying a giant fat egg?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bing, but I think not. We have taken historical data, but we've also historically been very conservative, and we routinely exceed those projections because we try to err on the side of you can't spend it if you don't have it, but if you get more in than you anticipated, we have plenty of projects and opportunities to, you know, lessen the burden on the tax rate if we are getting better revenues than what we'd anticipated. But I do think that in combination with the fact, and we have backed off and been, I think, more conservative on our sales tax, for example, because as I've shared with you all before, on that 1% local option, which is what folks buy in Orange County, actually countywide went down last fiscal year by more than 2%. We had a slight increase because of population changes primarily associated with the annexation. So we saw a very slight increase, but the surrounding counties, Chatham, Durham, and Alamance, were all at or very close to double-digit increases on that 1% local option. So doesn't mean, at least in the past year, that people were spending less money. They just weren't spending it in Orange County. Maybe in the future, people are just going to spend less money.
Right. What I'm positing, though, is that on the ad valorem side, which is our most stable source of revenue, you know, maybe I'm speculating, and maybe, well, no, I'm obviously speculating, and perhaps I'm being a little alarmist. But, and of course, the whole revaluation process is out of our control. The county does it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that we could be upside down in either this or the next cycle.
Well, now, what we don't do is factor in the revaluation.
Right.
We take sort of flatline projection and assume a certain percentage every year absent revaluation.
Right, because I know we have to readjust, but it would just involve a whole different set of numbers if, again, we were upside down on those figures. And, of course, if the county comes in, you know, reevaluates based on current historical trends that they've been reevaluating on and don't make adjustments for the market conditions, you're going to see so many lawyers descending on the county tax office, it won't be funny. So I'm just thinking that particularly, you know, all the local governments need to take this period of gross instability that I think we're looking at into account when making projections and perhaps even, run some numbers if things really go into the toilet.
Understood.
Yeah.
Any other questions for me?
I think we'll have some questions after
okay.
presentation.
Okay. George?
I wanted to express my congratulations to the fire chief on being a new father. I also have some good news. And that is the speed table on Oak Avenue was installed today. So,
another birth.
Congratulations to you, too.
Yeah. Are you passing out cigars?
Most of you thought I was going to be a father, right?
Didn't even take 9 months.
Public works humor.
You had Janet a little nervous.
Well, I'm here to talk about Weaver Street reconstruction, and I want to start off by just making a few main points. I want to talk about the history, which is all in your report in great detail, some of the construction considerations that was based on the downtown traffic study, the fiscal impact, and Steve has already said the proposed CIP reflects spending for the least expensive option, and I'll try and reiterate that at the end. A little bit about the background. Steve mentioned this goes back a long ways, and it does, back to 1997. If you do the math, that's, say, close to 10 years. It was then that it was realized that the pavement was showing deterioration, and based on geotechnical analysis, it was determined that due to poor conditions of the subgrade, it was advisable to reconstruct instead of resurface. And let me briefly explain. Resurfacing is adding a ribbon of pavement over the existing. Reconstruction would be removing the existing asphalt and removing the subgrade underneath and so forth to basically rebuild the street. And I have some cross-sections to show that. At that time, the description of the improvement was removing the existing asphalt, subgrade, curb and gutter, and in both blocks, and I put up a vicinity map here to show you. I'll refer to this as the west block of Weaver Street, Town Hall. We are over here. And this is the east block of Weaver Street here. Weaver Street Market is here. So the original proposed improvement way back in 2000 was just as I described on the pavement. The installation of some storm drains to improve the drainage. Any of you folks who have seen the street in a heavy rain, notice that there aren't very many inlets, and they all kind of, most of the water spreads out as you get down by Greensboro Street. Another major factor is that this project, we've been trying to coordinate with OWASA the installation of a 12-inch water main to replace a 6-inch and 8-inch main in both blocks. The sanitary sewer is okay, but we may need to repair or adjust some of the service laterals. Just a little more history. In 2000, the plans were put on hold pending the downtown vision report. It was anticipated that there would be design recommendations about street lights, benches, and perhaps wider sidewalks. As of April 2003, no decisions were made. At that time, a downtown traffic circulation study was being discussed. Plans were put on hold again. And it was at that time that the board decided to reexamine this project pending the completion of the downtown study. 2005, the downtown traffic circulation was indeed completed, and it had several recommendations. In essence, the recommendations suggested repaving the street, maintaining the existing cross-section, and that's important, and restriping to narrow the travel lanes to 10 feet from 11 feet, creating a 5-foot bicycle lane instead of the existing 4-foot bicycle lane. Other suggestions were to create wider sidewalks, a combination of a walk and a verge or a planting area, installation of mid-block crossings, updated signage, bike detectors, installation of some other signs, and so forth. This just gives you a brief idea of the proposed cross-section. Most of the typical section for our streets is 2 inches of asphalt on 8 to 10 inches of base course. And with the existing subgrade, poor subgrade conditions, and the anticipated traffic loading, the design engineer came up with this section, which is about 5 inches of asphalt on 12 inches of base and then a compacted subgrade. So we'd be excavating somewhere on the order of 19 to 21 inches. This gives you some, hopefully most of you are familiar with looking at cross sections. It's basically if you would take a slice down through the roadway and then look in, if you were looking in a window at the end of it, and this would be as if you're going from west to east. Again, the west block showing the 11-foot travel lane, 4-foot bike lane, sidewalks with about a 1.5 to 2-foot utility strip in between. And then you get down to the east block as we're going down in front of Weaver Street. There are no bike lanes, but there is currently, as you get down by the Spotted Dog, there is parking, and you see the parking lane is noted. The pavement width is exactly as the same as the other block, except when you're in front of the Century Center. What I do need to point out, and is part of the challenge with this project, is the existing right-of-way. We've located property pins out on the street, and the right-of-way is virtually at the back of the sidewalks. And that's important when I show you some additional pictures. So it makes it complicated or challenging to widen. When you get in the other block down by Weaver Street Market, for example, this would be that side. We found some pins that are at the back of the sidewalk there. And then on the other side, basically the building line by the Beehive and down through the Spotted Dog is basically the property line. So the right-of-way is variable down there, and also there is existing 5-foot walk by Weaver Street Market and a variable sidewalk on the other side. I'd like to, before we talk a little bit more about some of the options, go through to some photos here to give you an idea of the impact should we consider redoing the sidewalk or widening. This is north side of Weaver. Again, we're looking basically east, southeast, if you will. You see the utility strip and the poles and so forth. One of the plans is basically to widen the sidewalks in this block, which would be basically removing the existing sidewalk and putting the sidewalk back from the back of the existing sidewalk out to here, but involves redoing most of the driveways. And, of course, great impact if you would end up widening. A few more slides to make the same thing. This slide gives a good indication of the condition of the pavement. There's significant rutting, and the cracking that you see is indicative of base failure. 4-foot painted bike lane, 11-foot travel lanes. Another indication that should we widen, we would be into parking and certainly moving any sort of screening, landscape screening. There's several stone retaining walls, and again, the property line, right-of-way line, is right at the back of the sidewalk. Some significant trees on the south side here. The utility strip gets a little wider as you get up to North Greensboro, and again, you see there's roughly, this is about 7 feet from this point to the back of the curb here. This is where we're getting down in front of Weaver Street Market, and you see that I believe it was in the late 70s, 1979, that the town put in these decorative sidewalks, which is a theme that you see in much of the downtown area, the brick-lined sidewalk and so forth. And that is what's proposed in one of the options. So we have an existing 5-foot sidewalk in the east block, if you will. And here's an example of some of the trash containers and things that we talk about. Decorative lighting, bicycle loops. So I just wanted to show you some of those things. And just briefly here, go to some of the options that are outlined. The first, the basic option, which is still what we're proposing, is the reconstruction of the roadway from back of curb to back of curb, does not interfere with the right-of-way. And then we basically put some numbers to some of the options that were in the traffic downtown circulation study. See, in the west block only, we're looking to see what we could do to widen the sidewalk to at least a minimum of 5 feet, increasing it from 4 feet to roughly 5.5 feet. Again, the existing east block has 5 foot of width, So we see there the $319,000 of included engineering and construction costs. And then if we would look at putting in a commercial width sidewalk or taking into account one of the suggestions of having a 5-foot walk or a 4 or 5 foot verge planting strip, we look at then the potential for having right-of-way acquisition in both blocks. So you see the number right-of-way, engineering cost, construction cost for roughly $1.3 million there. And then we also put some price tags to some of these add-ons, decorative lighting, benches, bicycle loop detectors as well. And just in, I'll try to brief summary here. Here's some of the summary of the costs, if you would combine some of these numbers. Just a few of the major discussion points. The longer reconstruction is delayed, the more frequent and costly some of the temporary repairs. In 2005, we did all of our pavement survey, and this street, both blocks were our worst condition rating of all of our streets. The water main replacement, we're trying to coordinate with WASA. The water main is 78 years old. They have it in their CIP, and we're waiting for our timing. It would be beneficial to all if the pavement could be removed to save cost and then the water main put in as part of that. Both sidewalk options have significant costs and potential impacts, as I showed. Some of the architectural amenities could be installed without widening if we could get easements. Bicycle loops is something that could possibly wait. And again, I'll say the proposed CIP reflects spending for the least expensive option. And the fiscal impact, we started programming for this back in 2006. And just to give you some idea of the changes in costs, in 2003, when this project was put on, construction costs were estimated to be $400,000. In fall of 2006, when we started programming it, it was updated to $876,000 for 0809, and the current cost estimate for just the construction is just a little over $1 million. So our plan, in order to pay for the least expensive option, was to a combination of diverting some monies from the street resurfacing program and adding additional funds in subsequent fiscal years so with that we can complete the project in 2009-2010. A lot of information. And really interesting, too.
George, this is kind of a minor point, but do you have locations for the additional benches already determined? Or?
No. I think in the cost estimate, six groupings, and roughly it was adding, I think, four in the west block where there are none, and then possibly a couple in the east block, depending, but nothing specific. Of course, we don't have any right-of-way possibility of some easements. We do have the one parking lot, but we're leasing that. So there are some possibilities, though, that we would look at. But basically, somewhat equal spacing, probably mid and at the ends of the blocks, but no specific locations, no.
John and then George, is there any cost sharing with OWASA when it comes to if they will have to put that water main there without us having to do the reconstruction, they come in, they mess up the pavement, will they pay for that stuff? Will they budget for that?
Well, the water main there is already going to be paid for by OWASA, the water main replacement itself.
Do we get any cost sharing on the resurfacing?
No, and I think we'd have to take a look at the reason for doing the main. I think it behooves all of us that it would be good to be able to do it while the pavement is torn up for just construction staging and less impact and so forth. But just to do that, I guess they probably would, but at the same time, I think they would need to look at whether the size main is being put in is just to service them or there's fire protection issues and so forth where they may look upon the town as possibly participating in that. As in my discussions now, if we would take up the pavement and put it in, they would put in the water main at their cost. Of course, the reconstruction then is ours as part of that project.
And George, I would assume if they were to go in now and replace that main, all they do is come back in and patch. They wouldn't.
Yeah, we'd have. But there's already strips of.
They wouldn't come in and redo the street like we're talking about. They'd come in and just patch whatever they disturb.
It'd probably be a 5 or 6 foot wide patch down.
It'd be to everybody's advantage to try to coordinate our work with their work, so that they don't tear up a street that's already in bad shape, or worse yet, we get this thing redone, and then the next year they come back and have to put in a water main and tear up a brand new street.
You better not do that. Let's see, Alex, and then Randy, and then Dan.
This is more observation than anything else. George, the figures that you're showing that you described in terms of the cost escalation, since we actually put this on the table to now, are really kind of striking, and I'll plead, you know, just as guilty as anybody else, but I think it's kind of a shame that some of the more ambitious ideas, the whole Wound Earth idea, which was a sort of shared pedestrian vehicle space, fell by the wayside, and to some degree are just eliminated by the passage of time and cost, and that we could have gotten a lot more out of this project if we hadn't farted around for 8 years and actually made some decisions quite some time ago. But, you know, again, I plead as guilty as anybody else. But this is a really stark demonstration of how occasionally delay can result in getting nothing that you wanted, as opposed to getting half of what you wanted, which might have been the best choice in the first place. Just a little bit of the bitching and cranking on the way out the door.
I appreciate the report, George. I really did enjoy reading it. I'm interested in the fact that when you say there's 19 to about 21 inches of excavation, what portion of this cost is just that?
I don't have a breakdown, I'm sorry, of the cost estimate. I certainly can get you that figure. I don't want to put Henry on the spot if he would remember, but it's a good portion of it, obviously, in the reconstruction, because basically we were removing the pavement, and in the west block, actually removing the curb and gutter as well. So for that whole distance, it would be excavated that much. And then in the east block, where the sidewalk, though, is at the back of the curb, we would probably not want to disturb that and leave the curb and gutter in place and then just go from the face of the curb, basically the interior part of the street. So that number, that's a good portion of it.
Yeah.
There is some sidewalk and driveways that would, in fact, most of the driveways would be done as part of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And addressing some of the recommendations talked about ADA ramps and so forth, of course, we would do that automatically as part of the project.
When you brick the way it's bricked on East Weaver Street, mm-hmm. Does that significantly add to the cost?
Yes, roughly double, putting in the brick line and the way it's it's constructed.
Uh-huh. And you know, I guess the recommendation as it stands, you know, we're asked to not only accept the report, but to direct the town staff to concentrate on efforts in finding necessary resources for reconstruction. Give me an idea of what is meant by necessary resources.
I think we've already done that. Actually, that was kind of done hand-in-hand with writing the report, and as I mentioned, in terms of the plan and the funding, was diverting some funding from resurfacing and allocating more funds also to make it work.
We have a plan to get to the 1.3 by 2009-10.
That's correct.
Okay.
We don't have a magic box to pull out the money to get beyond that and to do what we're talking about here, the sort of the minimal to save this road.
Right.
Means, again, diverting for a couple of years some of the money that we normally would have put towards other resurfacing projects. But as George mentioned, this street is the worst of all of our streets in terms of ratings, and it's only going to get worse.
And let me say this here so everyone knows. I spoke with Jackie earlier this evening when she was saying she was ill and she wasn't able to attend. And, you know, she wanted me to say in her stead that, you know, she supports staff following up on whatever needs to be done to pursue the reconstruction on Weaver Street. So I'll say that for Jackie, and I'll say it also for myself. I think that it's a critical part of the vibrancy of downtown Carlboro.
And in that spirit, I think that's kind of what Steve was saying, is that we've got a moving target here.
Exactly.
And that the rewards continue to diminish the longer we dither and dicker about on this, and that we need it's either get off the dime or forget the whole damn thing.
So I would move we accept the report.
Okay, we have another presentation.
Sorry.
Also, at least on this.
So I'm understanding correctly that what's in the CIP is for the roadway reconstruction only, not
the 1.3, right? That's
chances.
Correct.
Okay. Are we able to put the sidewalk into the sidewalk bond program, or is that only for new sidewalks?
That would be a board decision. That was not included in the original list of sidewalks, and of course you can already see with our current list
a bunch of stuff would have to be bumped.
Yeah,
but it could
be already in excess of
4.6. If we thought this was an important sidewalk to reconstruct,
you could. Of course, you know, the other thing that George has alluded to, if you look at the fact that we don't have any right of way beyond the existing sidewalk, you're talking about potentially very significant real estate cost there to acquire right-of-way and significant impact on some of those businesses along Weaver Street to widen the sidewalk.
But not if we do the west block only. Am I reading that chart correctly?
If you do the west block only and widen it from
4 to 5.
Four to five and a half.
Yeah, if you take the grass strip, if that's what you're talking about.
Right, okay. So, and then we don't have the right-of-way. Okay, thank you.
And just to clarify, George, so the $1.3 million project would include those quite a number of ADA improvements, like the...
Yes.
There's a...
Yes.
One section of West Weaver Street sidewalk on the north side that's a part of a driveway to... I think it's the building the Dispute Settlement Center is in, and it's at a very steep angle. It's dangerous for...
Yes.
People in wheelchairs, that type of thing.
Yes, that would be part of the project at all the various intersections, certainly if we would put mid-block crossings. And rebuilding some of the driveways have some ADA implications, too, because some of them have significant cross slope, and we'd like to try to improve those at the same time.
Okay.
Question. George, is there any bike racks included in the in this project? That was part of, you chose some slides with benches and trash cans and all that stuff. Was that for the fancy, kind of the roadway version of expansion?
There are some bike racks, I guess, along the project already. No, it did not include. I was looking at a grouping of basically being a bench and a trash can. One of our very beautiful, nice blue benches costs right around $1,000. A bike rack is almost the same. We did install.
We want people biking rather than sitting, right?
Yes. Well, there are bike racks at our at the municipal lot in the mid block there at Weaver Street, the lot that we built, and there's certainly bike racks down at Weaver Street. They're on private property, of course, but an option would be in some of these other groupings. I threw something in just so we had something. Bike rack could be an alternative.
But as far as what you're recommending right now, obviously none of the benches and so forth are included.
No, really.
None of that.
I think those are things that could be considered, I guess, separately from this.
Right.
Okay. All right. And there's another presentation on
sidewalks and greenways.
Okay, that'll be Adina.
Y'all ready for that?
Yeah, I think so.
George, and then Adina.
Okay.
Again, I'd like to start out by telling you the main points of the presentation. I want to just brief review of the selection progress. I'll talk about progress on sidewalk projects, and Adina is here to talk about an update on the status of some of the greenway projects, talk a little bit about the remaining projects, and then, of course, funding constraints. As noted already, the current cost for the sidewalk and greenway projects are expected to exceed the $4.6 million, and the recommended CIP only reflects spending up to the $4.6, which Steve has already suggested. Since we were, or the board was considering additional projects. We decided as part of the report to throw in a review of the selection process. We did this the last time. And just quick summary, the project was quite extensive, involving the TAB. After the initial priority list was put together using the ranking criteria, the board made suggestions for a preliminary list. The preliminary list was then publicized and brought back for review. And then in response to that public comment and further review, the board made changes on the preliminary list and developed the first round, if you will, what became known as phase one of the bond projects. Also, during the course of the sidewalk project, staff, myself included, have received requests from residents inquiring about the sidewalks being built in their neighborhood. So we just want to point out that people are still interested in the existing projects and the projects that are on the existing list. You've already seen this. I had that first, but Steve took it from me.
Sorry, George.
Here are the completed projects. I know there's a pretty complicated table or a lot of numbers on it, but I'm showing this to point out that through the bond projects, the top 10 there, we have installed 1.9 miles of sidewalk. The feet is in next to it, and then the dates that they were completed. And then down below is a small enhancement project, which we did with in-house crews. Due to the scale of it, we were able to do that and receive some reimbursement, but we did not use any bond monies. Just some quick photos here. I'll go through these real quick. North Greensboro, South Greensboro, you've seen that. Jones Ferry, and the point of showing this is that this was a bond project that is now working its way up to Old Fayetteville Road, where there is an enhancement project. So we have some things coming together here with our sidewalk building. William Street going down to Wilson Park. Lloyd Street, same neighborhood. Fowler, those two connected, filled in some missing gaps. Bolin Forest, this one went way back before the bond program and was completed as part of this. This is a nice project. Hannah Street, going down to the Pacifica neighborhood, and part of the reason for showing this is the point out the cost. There's not just sidewalk, but new curb and gutter, asphalt work, retaining walls, and an extensive storm sewer system. This was a very expensive project.
It looks great.
Pleasant Drive bulb out. This was done. We received small construction funds. Point this out again that we received comments at the public meetings about this intersection when we were doing the sidewalk meetings. Town crews installed this, and we got reimbursed from the state. And I show a picture later that the sidewalk is indeed now going in down below here on Pleasant. This is the small Main Street job that goes down in front of the post office. This also leveraged some crossing improvements that the DOT is doing, crosswalks and the new PED signal that will go over to the Carborough Plaza. Steve did not have this one. This is the enhancement sidewalk projects. It shows three bond projects and three enhancement projects that are now underway and some almost completed. Here's a listing of them. So we have another 0.36 miles in enhancement projects and another half mile in Phase 1B projects. I point out that the sidewalk in front of Fitch is finishing up the North Greensboro portion. It involved getting right-of-way and some design issues. Here's the Jones Ferry Road. Goes from Morningside Storage down to the home of the Whopper. This is
this place.
This is Old Fayetteville Road, and is another reason for expense here. We're actually widening the road. Bond monies did not pay for the widening. That was not part of the bond project. We had some MPO funds for that. This is a wonderful project, as you can see by the apartments nearby. And this job is almost finished, both sections of it. Right here to where the cones are, it turns into Carborough Plaza. This is Brewer Lane. This is finally under construction. And if you notice here, there is some method to our madness. Right down here is the Robeson bike path and connection, which will then take people out. This is the new sidewalk going in on Pleasant Street. It's a new curb and gutter in process. That's not the finished curb and gutter. And they were pouring that day, and the forum's going down to the east. Here's a listing then of some of the remaining projects, the Phase 1B projects. The timing on this is we hope to not its estimated completion, actually. It should be the start there, and completion would be probably at some of these late 2008 and then some going into 2009. And then I've shown on the bottom here some of the additional projects that we've talked about and their costs. Rogers Road, estimated completion 9/10, and also the Barnes Street neighborhood. And I should point out that in your packet, as part of this report, is a cost estimate for Barnes Street, a breakdown of the various streets, not by block, but by each street.
So nothing on this slide is in the budget currently, right? This is all future.
No, it is. No.
Oh,
it is.
Okay.
In fact, we this is part of
the top part of
the top
part.
The top part.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And when I get to the summary table, it'll kind of show that.
Because I thought we don't. Okay.
Yeah. Some is and some is not. At this point, we've it'll show getting started on some of these projects and what we've committed to and started and where we're at in terms of total cost. The next two slides have to do with greenways, and I'll. Levitina.
Good evening. So the greenways are the other piece of the sidewalk and greenway bond program, and this table just shows what has been programmed through the STPDA funding that comes from the MPO as well as the town share that goes along with that funding. And as Steve mentioned in his introduction, the estimates that were used for these projects was done in 2003, and so it's likely that they're a bit under at this point. And when construction gets underway, we might find that out, so to keep that in mind. As far as where we are in this process, as you know, the Greenways Commission was established, and we're looking forward to a January kickoff of that group. And that will also kick off the planning process. As part of that, the town staff has initiated the municipal agreements that are necessary to use those funds that have been allocated through the MPO process, and so that's getting underway.
And which of those two, the Morgan Creek project is the one that we're assuming will be actually built on the ground first, is that right?
I think so, although because the funds are now available for both of those projects, I think what the plan is to go forward with the planning for both of them at the same time.
I see.
As far as construction, I'm not sure. So, yeah.
Morgan Creek is ahead of Bowling Creek in that in the CIP.
Yeah, but you can go ahead and get started with planning. And as Adina said, these are 2003 numbers.
Sure.
So I don't need to hit the play button on my previous admonition. And I think that's kind of what Adina's telling you.
Are there other questions about the greenways?
I think, you know, it's pretty obvious, but let me state the obvious. You can see how much we leverage with that 20% match. That becomes important with the next slide, I think Adina has.
Yeah. And so this slide is really here kind of as a preview for what staff is planning to bring back to you next week for a bit more of discussion. But about a few months ago, the MPO issued a new call for STPDA projects. And so what this is a list of potential candidates that the town could submit for that funding. And really it's here just to kind of keep it in mind so that when it comes to you next week, it's not done in a vacuum, and it's done with the realization that this discussion has already taken place. I think that's as much as probably we want to go into these particular projects.
Could I just add one,
yes,
one footnote,
please.
And that is none of these matching funds is included in the CIP. This is all above the $4.6 million.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right.
But you know, STPDA money, you know, you snooze, you lose, and you gotta get it in the hopper.
It'd be worth scaring up the money for what it leverages, certainly. I hate to, I don't want to dwell on this particular slide, but South Greensboro sidewalk, 5-foot sidewalk near the bus stop, 850 feet in length. Can that really be right for like $70,000? Sounds like a bargain.
These were numbers that were put together. So this project was initially within the STPDA list, but the money was moved to help with the Roberson bike path. And so it's not on the list anymore, so we're, you know, that's why it's in this list here. And that estimate was, I think that was from when that original estimate was done. But I think that there, I think I may have applied the new MPO spreadsheet to that, and it, and that's what it came out to be.
If I could add to that, that the that basically starts down at the end of the bottom part of Old Pittsboro and then goes south from there, 850 feet under the expressway. There's existing curb and gutter and would be a relatively easy project, so maybe that's why it seems like a bargain.
Right.
Yeah, this doesn't run down the hill.
Right.
Because that would, you know, that's...
That would definitely be a bigger dollar figure involved in that.
Right.
Particularly since we ain't got no right, well, actually, DOT, nobody's got any right.
Well, there is no right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think at some point we need to have some type of conversation with the property owners along the other section of South Greensboro Street about what kind of... develop some type of plan long term about how we might make pedestrian improvements along there. But
All right. So.
And now to the funding constraints, which is the last section. And what I've attempted to do here in this table is kind of see where we're at in terms of the cost as it relates to the bond. And the other upper block of the table shows the 4.6 million voters authorized to issue up to 4.6. Then I just wanted to remind you about the band, the bond anticipation notes. The initial amount was in June, and you see that was added to in February of 2007, and at that time was a total band amount of roughly 2.6. And then just recently we renewed the ban at the same amount. And it's not that costs are less, it's just that the timing is such that we've been working through. And that provides a cash flow up through September of 2008. They're issued on nine month increments. And then coming down, looking at where we're at on some of the projects, there's phase 1A completed. The bond amount in the left, you have the completed, the projects on the left column, bond amount, and then you have the accumulative bond amount to kind of show as we're going through. So you see phase 1A completed, the funding for the enhancement projects that the board approved. Phase 1B, there's three projects underway. They're estimated to be completed here in February, the enhancement projects mid-November. We have some other costs, legal and administration fees that are shown. And then the nominal $300,000, which is a rounded number up from the $291,000 that you saw on the previous chart there off to the right, $291,500. That's where the $300,000 is from. And just looking, coming across then, that you see that $808,000 remaining before we exceed the ban amount of 2.6. And then remaining projects and possible additions, there's the remaining Phase 1B projects, and adding those in puts us right at 4.2. And then I've reiterated the bond amount again there at 4.6 to kind of see that we're approaching that. Funding for Rogers Road then at $500,000 exceeds the bond amount by about $97,000. About a year ago when we looked at this slide, we were under by about 80,000, but now we're over by 97,000. And then looking at funding for Barn Street neighborhood exceeds the bond amount by about 482, and noted here the equivalent tax rate of that penny, 3 cents on the tax rate. Total funding, a little over $5 million. And I think the notes are important. The remaining Phase 1B and additional projects do not include right-of-way, although we've managed to skate pretty well on that. We did have to pay some right-of-way for the enhancement projects, which we were required to do. Green way estimate was 2003, it's relatively old, and the remaining Phase 1B projects are based on preliminary plans. We do not have final plans yet for those remaining seven projects, although some of them are pretty close.
So the action that you need tonight, George, though, is just to renew the bands to keep the money going.
Well, we've renewed the bands. We've done that. That was that was a few weeks ago. We're basically saying the recommended CIP only reflects the spending up to 4.6, so that's kind of what we're shooting for at this point.
So is this where I'm supposed to see that we've committed some of the Table 3 projects? Because I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing that those are not committed.
I'm sorry, which projects?
When you had the Table 3 up earlier,
George, go back
my
to the
question
one that
was
the 2.378, which has James Street and all those, because
that. Yeah, and you were saying some of these were committed already in the budget.
Well, we've had, yes, and okay. I guess
committed. Which ones?
Well, committed from the standpoint that we've had neighborhood meetings on all of them.
Okay, but well,
are they not reflected in that $5 million total?
Through number 20, those are all included in the CIP as a part of the $4.6 million. So everything that you've seen is included in the CIP right now based on the 4.6, except Rogers Road and Barnes Street, because Rogers Road was never a part of the original bond plans, and Barn Street, that neighborhood was on the very lowest end of the ratings when they were originally put out.
Okay. But am I correct that tables 1 and 2 are entirely budgeted already, and table 3 is entirely not budgeted?
No, portions of it are, I guess, as we're doing bands. Yes. Yeah, we've extended band funding up through September of 2008, which includes funding for some of those up to the 2.6.
Okay.
And then we'll have to add another band amount to go up additional to finish the Phase 1B projects.
Okay, and where are we now in terms of the current band? It looks like, I mean, when I add this up, it looks like only about 1.6.
No, the current band that we have is 2.6. When you look at where we're at on spending, and throwing in, there's completed, these are in progress, under construction, Phase 1B, three projects underway, those are under construction, these are legal fees we'll encounter, we're reserving monies for the greenways, and that puts us at 1.7.
George, go back.
Okay, so we've
go
got
back
about to 700.
Yeah, go back to that.
You say there are 808 remaining.
Go okay. back to that slide that shows the James and Ben and so forth. Yeah. If you look at that, basically if you did James Street and Shelton, that takes up the band money.
Okay. Thanks.
Does that help?
Yes, that's what I was looking for.
So in order to include Rogers Road in the CIP, basically we're talking about there's a $97,000 gap.
Yeah, let me mention another option that I thought Adina was going to mention that we can talk more about next week, and that is the potential to look at the STPDA funding for Rogers and or Barnes,
mm-hmm.
where if we were able to do that, we'd be looking at a 20% match on that instead of 100%.
Were any of the projects in that are remaining from Phase 1B ones that for which there was a whatever it was called, protest petition or what have you in the process?
Well, there were a total of three petitions. Lindsay Street, which was taken off,
ended up being dropped. Yeah,
dropped. Oak Street.
Also dropped.
No, not entirely. It was put to the bottom of the list, is my recollection.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then we have one for Shelton, but we've been working extensively there with the neighbors to try to get that one to work. So that's a possibility. We're hoping we can still sell the project, if you will.
Right. I point that out, for example, that Shelton Street sidewalk's which I think is, you know, I mean, it leads right to Carborough Elementary School. It makes a lot of sense to build it. I'm not, but it's $142,000, for example. Another possibility I would point out is, you know, that Ash Street and Elm Street are two parallel streets that are one block apart from one another. The sidewalks on both of those streets perform very similar functions. I don't know whether, you know, one of the cheaper of the two projects, Ash Street, which is where I live, by the way, let me point out, that sidewalk project, again, leads directly to Carborough Elementary School. The Elm Street project, $156,000, will lead to the Shelton Street sidewalk you're proposing to build, but it doesn't connect, to my way of thinking, it doesn't connect in a notably different way than the Ash Street sidewalk does, for example. So I could see some logic in saying, well, let's go ahead and put the Rodge Road project in and potentially drop something like the Elm Street. But I don't know how invested either the staff or the residents on Elm Street, for example, are in that sidewalk.
Well, that was one. I mean, we did have a neighborhood meeting with them, as I recall, George.
We did, with all the Phase 1B projects. We've had neighborhood meetings, and so I think the anticipation that we did not receive a petition from them that they are still.
Yeah, I think the issue the board would want to think about is we had two neighborhood meetings with the folks on these streets. They were in the original list, highly rated. There's an expectation from that neighborhood that this is going to happen, and so there have to be, I guess, some explanation about why one that's been in the pipeline for a while versus another.
And I guess, you know, I mean, I think obviously these issues are always debatable, and I'm not saying that I have it fixed in my mind that we should drop that project. And even if we did make the kind of adjustment I was just suggesting, I think it's not that we would not build a sidewalk on Elm Street. It's just a question of whether that would be a part of this $4.6 million bond issue. Let me ask you one other question while I have the floor here for a moment. If Rogers Road were one of those STPDA funded projects instead, which would be great, what kind of implications might that hold for the timetable for the construction of the project? Or do we have any? I mean, let me put it this way: if it was selected as an STPDA project, would there be any hope that it would be built on, you know, you said here, maybe something like 2009, 2010?
Well, that, you know, I guess that's contingent upon having the funding to do that, come to think of it, and looking at that, our funding only goes into part of Rogers Road.
That's based on money we don't have, so
yeah.
I'm not sure where the...
Well, yeah, we're about 97,000 short for doing...
Well, but what I'm suggesting is that if we dropped, for example, the Elm Street project, that would, you know, potentially pull us back into line.
Yeah.
If you had 20% of Rogers Road, then you're well in line.
Well, that's true, but I guess my, my experience with waiting for the... for the MPO to come up with money is that that's a lengthy process, and
it just depends on the funding cycle. I mean, we're in call for requests right now.
Well,
Adina, what the years that this is available for are what? Oh,
it's starting with 2009, and
2009, right.
So part of discussing that would be you can say that you would want this project or whatever project to be submitted for a specific funding year, and so you could submit the Rogers Road project for the 2009 funding.
What determines the approval of an SDPDA grant?
How much money there is and negotiation.
But are there any other constraints in terms of what kind of roads they'll work with, or...
They have a criteria sheet that you have to fill out for each of the projects that you submit, and it's based on a lot of different factors, travel demand and environmental and community and those kind of impacts as well. So they look at all of those things, and it's comparing those projects to projects that have been submitted by, you know, Chapel Hill and Durham and Hillsborough and Orange County.
And
So are there, wait, are there certain roads that that are on this list that would be higher rated in terms of the criteria than others?
I mean, I think that's that that falls out though the, as you
yeah.
go through the criteria. But there's not a road that you could just identify right away and say, oh, that would be higher. I think you have to go through that process.
And they have to run them through the model, if you
right.
will. I mean, it's not a hard and fast model. I mean, most of this stuff gets done on the staff level between the transportation planners for the respective organizations, and they just hash through this. And there's just there's X number of dollars that's available in a funding cycle, and it's also taken into consideration historically, you know, who drained the pot last time, so now it's somebody else's turn. Right. That kind of stuff also goes on, but it's pretty functional. And you know, I mean, just off the top of my head, I would think that Rogers Road would probably be pretty popular in that it's an interjurisdictional issue, and I would
sure
think
is.
Or hope that Chapel Hill would
and the
be supportive.
And
the county would be
right.
supportive.
Would take a special interest in the matter.
And we certainly have time to put the application in.
Well, okay. Well, let me ask you one other question, which is, so this 1.1 miles is for Rogers Road is from where to where? That's from High School Road to, I mean, not High School Road, Homestead Road.
Homestead.
Homestead Road to Eubanks.
It can't be all the way to
Eubanks.
No,
it can't. No, that's...
Well, I'd be out of our jurisdiction.
Right.
So, no, it can't be.
It literally can't be. But 1.1 miles and... It's longer than that, I'm down there anyway. But that could be the church or...
Would you see the Atlantic Stand over there?
No,
the last
I think it's
little
a little
part
further
is,
than that.
Yeah, there were...
Mark's eyes just about popped out as when he said that.
Oh my God, did somebody say the A word?
Not me. Based on the discussions we had, it went from Homestead, this is from the north, from the south, Homestead to Tally Ho Trail, Tally Ho Trail to Purefoy, which is roughly where the church is, and then from Purefoy to Meadow Run Court, which is just about where the town limits.
So it's almost all the way to Eubanks Road. Close. Well, because I just point out that'd be another approach to it. We'd break it into you know, if, for example, the STPDA situation wasn't promising, we could break it into different phases and maybe build, you know, whatever, half of that distance or whatever we have money available for.
Mm-hmm. Randy, you're in that committee, the county's committee on Rogers Road. Have they talked about sidewalks?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Because, you know, it occurs to me that since, you know, the interjurisdictional thing is brought up, that, you know, the county does have an interest in that, and they may be interested in putting it on the other side of the road. I mean, I don't know if they would or not, but, and I don't know that, you know, if there's going to be one sidewalk for now, do we care which side, if that came up in terms of the MPO or whatever.
I think if, to the extent that it got considered at the MPO, we probably wouldn't even consider the question of which side of the road to put it on.
Except our 20% match
jurisdiction
wouldn't be spending
I'm
it over.
Fine to have Chapel Hill pay the 20% match.
Well, I'm all for that. But,
but it sounds like it's a discussion that involves more than just us here as far as the potential to get that road.
Yeah, we need to get the request in the hopper, though, if we're going to do it.
And we should probably also have that discussion in light of what the other possibilities are, because I think, for example, the Williams Street multi-use path is also a very important project. So
are we directing staff to pursue the SD PDA?
Well, they're going to bring us an agenda item next week. Is that right?
We are, but we also, I think we've got to get a preliminary list in. There's been a moving target on the application deadline. We're actually going to have to get something in to the state, I believe, before next Tuesday.
So my question
is that correct, Adina?
Would be going back to the list. Why wouldn't Estes, for example, be a good, you know, sidewalked area for an STPDA? Why? I mean, that seems in terms of traffic and volume.
I recall that it was But with the long time where it was programmed, it was many years out, and we decided to pursue through our own bond program. I think I'm correct in saying
okay.
That.
It's in the, yeah, it's in like the TIP for 2013 and following.
It wasn't even on the list the last time.
That's different than SDPDA. That's a different pot of money.
I'm sorry.
It was a TIP project.
Could it be actually, there's no reason it couldn't be considered for a possible SDPDA project as well.
Yes, it absolutely could. I think keeping in mind that if we, with the Williams project as well, we would be putting in parallel, kind of parallel projects for the same pot of money. So,
well, and also it should be pointed out that, you know, all of these can be funded through SDPDA as long as nobody else in the entire area wants any SDPDA money. But that's not.
You got to remember the history of the William Street project, which is that we decided to pursue that instead of the direct Estes Drive project because we didn't want to run into all the right-of-way and other issues, and that we could get this done in a reasonable amount of time without a lot of wrangling, and that the cost estimates that we have are at least reasonably reliable. You start getting into right-of-way negotiations, and God knows what you're going to come up with.
Well, and also we'll say that the William Street project doesn't do any good for people who are trying to walk downtown from Estes Park Apartments or places along there, too.
Right, but at $546,000, I think, you know, it's worth looking for other sources. That's my point.
Well, I hear you on that. I think the problem is that you know, we've said in the past, well, we've said for a long time that it's been one of our top priorities.
That's right.
Has been improvements along that corridor, and we say that to the State Board of Transportation, and they put it in year 2013 and following, which, you know, you can see what that's gotten us so far.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a question of.
Well, we were pushing hard on certain things and not pushing hard on others, and you got to make choices and trade-offs.
Sure.
And that's one where we chose to let it slide rather than to kick and scream.
I guess my point is that, you know, it's too much to hope for to think that you're going to get both of the Estes Drive project and the Rogers Road and William Street all funded through SDPDA program. I mean,
ain't gonna happen.
I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it's not going to happen.
And Barnes,
not that much money.
Barnes was, are you including Barnes in that also?
Well, Barnes was the other question. What do we want to do about Barnes? You know, we made very important decisions based on the traffic issues on Barnes and the lack of the appropriate facilities for pedestrians and bikes on Barnes to Jones Ferry.
Well, that's still a concern, I think, but it's whether or not there. I mean, I guess the question of whether that shopping center, whatever you want to call it, is going to be built has some implications for how high a priority we really should make that, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I don't think we know the answer to that question right now, but.
What would happen if we drop Elm Street and use that money towards Rogers Road? I mean, this is something that I understand neighborhoods have been having meetings, but the Rogers Road folks have had that meeting 15 years ago, have been promised a lot, and I don't want to wait for the other jurisdictions to do the right thing. I mean, they're just going to keep putting them in the hopper for STP money, and
they'll
probably get the Lamford transfer station before they even get sidewalks. So I think we need to do the right thing.
The thing is that you can put it in the hopper for STPDA money and go ahead and program it. If it turns out that you want to change your priorities, you can always do that in the next funding cycle.
Right, that makes sense.
But if your projects are actually listed and funded and programmed,
you're locked.
Yeah, I mean, you've got it in hand. I mean, your point is well taken. It's just something to consider.
Well, I'm not opposed to submitting the Rogers Road project into that STPDA process, but I guess I'm not feeling ready to let go of the notion that it may be built with bond funds if something promising doesn't come out of that STPDA process.
Mm-hmm.
That's my.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
desire.
We also,
that's
what
y'all want to deal with.
Yeah. Sounds like you're a problem.
I'm going to leave that steaming pile on your doorstep.
Well, we also need to find out what the county decides to do out there.
Well, in terms of how they might... Oh, well,
in terms of, yeah, if a sidewalk stays on their priority list and how they want to address that, you know, maybe the easy way for them to do that would be to contribute to the cost of a sidewalk in Carrboro rather than build another sidewalk in Orange County.
Yeah, that's definitely
we need to look at it physically, too, in that there's a patchwork of sidewalks on the... one side, which is on the other
east.
Side.
On the Chapel Hill side, there is some sidewalk already.
So there, from Homestead.
Yeah, and the portion that we just installed along Homestead connects along the east. Mm-hmm. So those are just things to consider in terms of the overall cost of the project, because if you're filling holes rather than, you know, it's a little counterintuitive to go ahead and build the whole thing on the other side when there's already a patchwork in place on one.
Well, that could inform the that could relate to the suggestion I had earlier, which is to maybe build it in two phases, and if we can only work one phase of the Rogers Road sidewalk in to this on funding round, then
this is sort of a tangential point, but I think it would be helpful if we referred to the other side as the Orange County side, since that's what it is, except for in planning and.
Well, this
part of Chapel Hill too.
The none of it is Chapel Hill.
You don't think the Habitat
from
subdivision
Ziegler
was that?
To Purefoy isn't Chapel Hill?
No,
really?
Ziegler.
You sure about that?
Yeah, yeah. It came up very recently, and
that's how it shows on the map. There is it's not in.
That's true.
Right. But for example, we talked about this with the bus system. Is that Chapel Hill cannot contribute to bus service on Rogers Road because none of Rogers Road is in Chapel Hill. And that would apply to sidewalk as well. So we need to, that's what I'm just saying, that it's clear if we focus on the county.
I see what you're saying.
Can I ask the question?
Yes.
What would be the impact on the tax rate if we add Rogers Road? How much would that be? 2 cents? Cent and a half?
Well, most of it could be covered, but that's with a big assumption that the Greenway numbers are right, which they're not. I could easily see that 300,000 being 500,000 or 600,000. But a penny or two, John, but keep in mind that we're already talking about a number of other projects that are already approved, i.e. the fire station, which is going to have a significant impact. Okay. And operating budget that you haven't seen for next year.
Well, let me suggest this. Here's what I want to suggest is that we'll go ahead and include Rogers Road in that STPDA process, and then we'll see what shakes out of that process over the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. And I guess if there's no reason to be optimistic about it after a couple of months of the dust settling on that, then I would like to see us try to look at how that Rogers Road project might be broken down into some segments so that we can figure out what segment of it we could afford to build as a part of that bond package.
I think we can do that. And again, as George mentioned, and I think I alluded to, out of the existing $2.6 million band, we've got another roughly year's worth of work.
Yes, programmed up through September of 2008.
Before we have to make a decision, before the board has to make a decision about what to do with bands.
So as a practical matter, we couldn't get to it anyway until 2009.
Until we figure out what the greenways are really going to cost.
But that's the planning cycle Dean is talking about, is 2009. So if you choose to go ahead and make Rogers Road a priority, my recommendation would be put it in the friggin' hopper and mm-hmm. push for it.
Because mm-hmm.
if you get it in hand, that just gives you more flexibility to deal with the rest of it. Mm-hmm. If you ain't got it, maybe y'all do that.
Okay.
So we'd add that to the recommendation.
Yeah.
I agree.
And It sounded like everybody was comfortable with on the previous item with leaving the Weaver Street project as a $1.3 million project in the CIP for
sad to say, but that's what we're looking
that will at. Also have to be a one of those. There'll have to be phase two of that one day.
Yeah. Let me just go back and clarify what our thinking is regarding Barnes Street. We want to wait and see. We have a wait-see attitude about the commercial implication, or I'm still terribly interested in that. And
we don't know what's going to happen there.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to know how to prioritize it without knowing whether somebody's going to build something.
It kind of sounds like there needs to be more discussion with the neighborhood about exactly what their interests are, because those interests were expressed in direct conjunction with that permit application. And I'm not really sure what I heard. In short, were the neighbors interested in having that infrastructure as something to help alleviate the impacts of the permit that was proposed, or were the neighbors interested in having that done, period? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really clear on, I'm not clear on what the answer is to that. So I think that the folks in the neighborhood,
that's a good point.
More needs to have a conversation with the folks in the neighborhood about what their interests are at this point.
And what they think they need.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think as well as that, that will give us some good information, but we need to put it in the context of what is our understanding of what moves what was originally a number 62 ranked project, you know, jumping ahead past 30 or 40 others. You know, is it just because that's, you know, the last neighborhood we've heard from that didn't like something that was going to go in there, you know, or
was it a problem that wasn't? Or was it a problem that wasn't recognized for a long time?
Yeah, well, there is that. I think we need to, you know, weigh that as objectively as possible.
It's inimical to the business.
So, are we ready to move attachment A?
Second.
With all those comments.
Are you clear enough about how board is?
If I could ask a couple clarifying questions, just to make sure. Keep Weaver Street as is projected in the proposed CIP.
Right.
And for the time being, I think I'm hearing that the 4.6 that we do have programmed in the CIP for the sidewalk bonds and greenways would stay at that level.
Correct.
Yes.
And then we'll pursue the SBTDA money for Rogers Road.
Right, exactly.
But that still leaves open the possibility of coming back
from
for buying funds.
From a timing standpoint, by the time all this shakes out, you'll be having this conversation next year anyway. And so you can always adjust it in the next CRP cycle.
We can invite you back for a special guest appearance.
$200 an hour.
Yeah. We can't afford it as long-winded as we are. Okay.
Might actually impose some discipline.
Oh, yeah, maybe so. Get a little counter rolling. So it's been moved and seconded for the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. And Mr. Manager, did you have anything else?
That's it. Thank you all very much for your indulgence with a lot of detail tonight.
Thank you guys for good presentations.
Love it.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying
aye.
Aye.